Hello and welcome to Ask Margot, today's brand new program where I'll be taking your questions and providing you with an insightful and effective answer. That's my intention, that's what I'm qualified for, and that's what I'm here for. I should start with some info about me, the short version. I'm a clinical hypnotherapist trained in rapid transformational therapy, RTT, which is just the most amazing therapy I have ever come across. I like to say it's not talk therapy, it's change your life therapy. I'm also a speaker and a coach, and my focus is on the transformational power of positive words, because the words we use create the outcomes of our lives. Or to put it another way, it's all about the story we tell to ourselves and about ourselves. That story needs to be one we want and not the one we don't want, because there's creative power in our words. I've written books on cooking, life and relationships, especially the romantic ones, and I write for some other publications. I believe that we can find the answers to the things in life that keep us feeling stuck and keep us sick and keep us feeling small. That's a biggie. So if you're feeling stuck, sick or small, send your questions in. There's one more aspect of what will be in the mix of what I can help with. I'm what a friend once called a conduit for the universe, the source or God. The names we use make no difference to the truth of a message. I use the term the universe because that term doesn't get anyone's back up or challenge anyone's spiritual inclination, whereas sometimes God gets a bad rap. Where is he when you need him? Why isn't he stopping something? Things like that. So we'll stay with the universe. I receive messages and answers to questions I ask of the universe, so that's another deeper level where I can be of help. They're so encouraging and life-affirming, so I'm really pleased that Access Radio liked the idea that I can deliver one of these messages at the end of each show. If you want to know more, you can ask one of those kinds of questions. Enough about me, though if you want more background, you'll find that on my website at margotunlimited.com, Margot with a T. So this show is all about you, your issues and questions. It's about finding solutions for you, but not just something random and pulled out of a hat. I'm not interested in that. We want a solution that you will recognize as being right on target. That's why we're here. We want you to write in with these questions or problems and see what kind of light I'm able to shed on what you ask. So our first question today is a long one. I thought it could be fun to make up a name for each questioner, because, of course, we value your privacy and confidentiality when you write in. Today, we're answering Molly's question. It's a real-life situation for her. Here it is. Hi, Margot. I'm the oldest of three children, in my mid-50s, and up until just over 2 years ago, the only one who kept regular, meaningful contact with our dad. In February 2021, my father and I had a falling out. Complicated story, but let's just say, despite two remarriages, his relationship with my mother still obviously bothers him. During the course of our final emailed conversation, my father brought up a whole lot of past history involving my mother, who's been dead for 30 years, and before that, they were divorced since I was 10. That was the final straw for me. As I said, I'm the only one of his children who'd made an effort to maintain a relationship, and I was pulling him up on an overreaction he was having regarding one of his grandchildren, my oldest son, at that stage 23 years old, when he responded with some vile topics relating to my mum. Over the next year, I acknowledged both his and his wife's birthdays with gifts, etc., from his grandchildren, but when no acknowledgement of any of my children's birthdays or Christmases was received, I stopped all forms of contact. The issue I have now is that my father has a major milestone birthday coming up, 80, and the good daughter part of me feels like that should be acknowledged. My husband is completely against me doing that. He's very biased against my father and his wife for the many shitty things that have happened over the years we've been married, 30, that I've forgiven him, often against my husband's wishes. Talking to close friends who understand what happened in 2021 and what my relationship has been like with my father during my adulthood, most are of the opinion that if I do reach out, I have to be prepared for the fact that I may be rejected or ignored, and I'm not sure if my emotional headspace will be able to deal with that. What would Margot recommend my actions be in this situation? Well, at first glance, that sounds like a very complex situation. And I have had people say to me before, oh, it's terribly complex, implying that it's very hard to unravel. But I disagree. We have to kind of peel back the layers to get to the essence of what's really happening, what matters and what doesn't. This is just about you, Molly. You obviously have the role of carer in your family, and that influences the way you interact with them. It's good to be aware of this because it's a role you can choose to change if you want to. Let's start with the past. The past has gone and you cannot change it, only how you perceive it. Your mother fits into this. Just hold her at a happy place in your mind and memories and never allow anything to mess with that unless you feel you have something to resolve for yourself, because you can't resolve things for anyone else. Your father is making his own choices and you can't change those from the outside. You can only hold in your mind how you would like him to behave. And that's an incredibly powerful place to make change from. Your son is his own man travelling his own path, and he will make surprisingly sound judgments for himself about your father and his comments and your family dynamics. We often underestimate the wisdom our children have. Your husband is there to support you, but you must make your own decisions independent of what he thinks or what he would do. You can smile at him, thank him for his input, and request his ongoing support of whatever you decide to do. It's not his place to decide for you, and he will know and respect that. And you can tell him that you know he will respect that. I'd like you to picture yourself, Molly, in 5 years' time, or when your father has left this world. When you look back, how would you like to see yourself and how you handled the situation? How would you feel about it? What choices would you make based on that feeling? Perhaps you would make a gesture, but not throw a huge party. After you look back from the 5-year point, you will know exactly what the future you would like to have done. So that's how you make that decision. I can see that you've endeavoured to step into your generous self and obviously been able to forgive a great deal. It's very important that we never see ourselves as the victim. Never allow that thinking. I hear you when you say you don't have the emotional strength to face being rejected or ignored, but that's something you can manage by what you say to yourself, the story you tell yourself. Eleanor Roosevelt has a famous quote, and it is, "No one can make you feel inferior without your consent." I love that quote. And it applies across the board. You can't feel rejected or ignored unless you give your consent to that feeling. If you choose to reach out, you can do that from a strong place by first saying to yourself, "I am a strong, confident woman. I cannot be rejected or ignored unless I allow that, and I do not. I attract only respectful, appreciative, and loving relationships. Because it's what I project, that's what comes back to me." What you send out is what you attract, because life works like a boomerang. So to sum it up, Molly, let the past be. Let all the others take care of their own thinking and behaviour. You do you. Look ahead 5 years and make your decision. And if you choose to be involved, then know that no one can make you feel what you do not accept, because you're projecting what you choose, not what they choose. Do let us know how this goes for you, Molly. Remember, you are in the choosing seat of your life. So, our next question is from Jack. Jack says, I am constantly comparing myself to others and feeling inadequate. People tell me to stop comparing, but I can't seem to really feel confident or good enough about myself to break out of it. I don't really feel I'm that special. My family always criticised me, and I never felt supported or even seen, really. My opinions didn't count, and I just felt not good enough most of the time. I still feel like that, and I don't know how to change it. Signed, Jack. Hi, Jack. Well, you're certainly not alone in feeling like this. One of the most common underlying issues people deal with is not feeling enough. As a therapist, I would say you need to find out the subconscious reason for this issue in your life. There is always, always something that has happened, usually more than once, that the younger you has believed, and then your subconscious has built a kind of program around that. Perhaps when you were small, something happened to you and you thought it proved that you were not lovable or worthy or important. The program that's been running in your subconscious in the background and is still influencing you today, that same feeling. You need to address that and clear it. Do you remember the movie The Help, where the nanny told the little girl she looked after, who was kind of ignored by her mother, that she was kind, smart, and important? She said, "You is kind, you is smart, you is important." And you could see that little girl just lapping it up. They're very powerful words. And the nanny told her over and over because that little child was not hearing it from her mother, and the nanny knew she needed to hear it. The great thing about the fact that we are no longer children is that we can take up the role our parents or influential adults once had in our lives. Now we're in charge. I'm all about us being equipped to step into our own empowerment. Now, Jack, you are in charge, and your opinion of you is the only one that really counts. You have to ramp up your self-talk. You need to tell yourself you're great, worthy, unique, kind, smart, and important. There's only one of you. There's only one of all of us. If you find it difficult to be convinced, I find it works really well to play a kind of game of exaggeration because it keeps it lighthearted and it keeps your state upbeat. And that's really vital. It doesn't work to say the words if you don't have the feeling behind the words. You have to feel good to create good. Say, "I believe I am the most kind, smart, and important person I have ever met." Or, "This side of the Great Divide." Or, my favourite from Edna of the Incredibles, who says she is the best in the known universe until the end of time. Just play with it and be creative. Exaggerating lifts your state, makes you smile. It takes away from the doubt that you would have had before. Try it and you'll see. You are talking to you. No one else hears. And once you establish your strong self-esteem in your own mind and beliefs, that energy will change things for you. I know from personal experience that if you see yourself in a particular light, others pick up on that, and that's how they treat you. If you feel less than, they will see you like that, and that will dictate your results. This is something only you can change, because only you can choose how you think and speak and show up in life. You tell a different story. I do have a free little ebook on my website called Tell a Different Story, which explains all of this. Think about the words, "I am." They are identifiers. Whatever you say after "I am" is how you're identifying yourself. Let's look at what you said in your question. "I find I'm constantly comparing myself to others and feeling inadequate." So stop saying "I am" followed by anything negative. And if you hear yourself saying it, restate it immediately with what you want. Say, "I am smart, I am kind, I am confident, I am the best at what I do, I am special." It's all true. Make a script of how you want your life to be. Write it out. Start with, "I am," and then record it and your I am statement on your phone and play it morning and night when your mind is at the most receptive. Your mind loves repetition. That's how we work. Everything that's in your life has been based on what's been repeated to it. And now you must start to repeat what you want and not what you don't. Your mind is designed to follow your deliberate instructions. You've got this, Jack. You have the power to turn it around. If you get stuck, get some help to turn around that subconscious blueprint. So I hope that helps, Jack. Now we're up to number three of our questions today. I think we probably all relate to this. We all have moments when we feel like this. It's from Peggy. I have a tendency to procrastinate, and I often find myself putting off important tasks until the last minute. How can I break this cycle and become more productive? I allow myself to be distracted and diverted all the time. Eating, Netflix, chatting, scrolling on my phone, and just not doing what I need to do. Just ends up with being a log jam and with me disappointing other people and myself. What shall I do to stop it? Well, here's what I think will help you make progress, Peggy. Firstly, I'd take some time to look at what lights you up. Are you doing what you really love with your life? Personally, I have high energy levels because I love what I do. It's not work for me. Vacuuming is work for me. Make sure you have life goals. They don't have to be lofty or big. They just have to be yours and make you happy. So nail down what your goals are and then make a life plan for yourself with timelines. It will help motivate you. It doesn't have to be for your whole lifetime if that's too much to contemplate. Just start with the week or the month. What would you like to achieve this month? It's a good place to start. I also think you need to take a moment with yourself to ask, why do you do this? Why do you procrastinate? If it's as straightforward as not wanting to do the things you don't like, people often suggest that you bite off the things you dislike the most and do them first, or the hardest ones. I don't do that. I have what I call the alternating method. I find it very easy and sort of natural. I just do the thing I don't particularly care for, maybe not all of it, but a chunk of it, and then I do something I like, and repeat. You can do this the whole day and into the evening, the thing you don't like, and then the thing you do. And as long as you don't spend too long on the hard thing, it doesn't seem onerous or too challenging. You know you're making progress. Yesterday, I was alternating writing, which I love, with popping outside to do a spot of chainsawing and stacking of firewood, which I would rather someone else did. This means I don't sit for too long at my computer, and the day feels quite satisfying when I look back. I feel quite zen about it and pleased with my achievements. So try that. Alternate what you don't like with what you do and see if you can find a kind of rhythm in that. If, though, when you ask yourself why you're stuck in this behaviour and you get a more tricky response, or you're stumped, a response, for example, that you might be afraid of success or of putting yourself out there, or failure, for example, then I'd look at the reason behind that. Why do you think that about yourself? Ask what the message might be in this. Look more deeply at the resistance and ask yourself, what could the message to me from me be in this? Sounds like a funny question, but it's really interesting if you focus and keep looking within, what could I be trying to tell myself? Interesting things come out. Now, this could be obvious to you, or it may require some deeper investigation. So to recap, Peggy, one is get some great goals for your life. Find out what you love and make a plan. Two, alternate between the things you do and don't like to do so you don't get kind of stuck on the ones you don't want to do. Number three, ask yourself why. Just do a bit of internal investigation. You'll be amazed at what you come up with. Lastly, and this is really important, you need to make a decision that you're going to do things differently. You are the boss of you. You are the only one who can make change in your life. It doesn't come from outside of you. It starts with a decision, your decision. Empower yourself and decide now that you're going to do things differently. I'm sure you'll do fabulously. Well, our last question today is from Bob. It's kind of short, but we'll all relate to this probably at some time in our lives, possibly. He says, I'm not having any luck with women, and I want to change that. Please give me some tips that work! What should I do? Where do I begin? Well, let's talk about the things that women are attracted to. Research shows that there are six primary things, and we're going to talk about them. Number one is confidence. Women are often attracted to men who are self-assured and confident in themselves and their abilities. But please don't be constantly talking about how great you are. Women find that most unappealing. Confidence can be conveyed subtly through the way you hold yourself, how you speak, and how you interact with others. Stand unapologetically straight and tall. Speak clearly and confidently, and say important things. If you can't think of anything important to say, just ask questions and let the woman answer without interruption. Nothing is worse than being interrupted or spoken over by a man you've just met. Women do not like that. Number two, a sense of humour. A good sense of humour is great in a man. Women enjoy men who make them laugh and feel good. But if you're not sure she will find your sense of humour funny, then just stick with making her feel good. That's a very good second option. A heartfelt compliment on meeting is always a good thing. Don't do it at the end of an evening when her hair is ruffled and her lipstick is gone. Do it at the beginning when she feels she looks her best. Women really appreciate that. Third is emotional intelligence. It's a word that's bandied around a wee bit. What does it mean? To be able to communicate effectively and empathise with others, to listen actively and express yourself in a clear and constructive manner. Do not dominate the conversation with your opinions. Just don't do it. Ask her what hers are. Ask her what she thinks and feels. Then cleverly stop yourself from somehow embellishing that with your own opinion. Unless she asks you to. If she doesn't say, what do you think, or what's your advice, then do not give it, because she doesn't want it. Women like to think for themselves and not have a man telling them all the time what they think she should think. Number four, ambition and drive. Many women find ambition and drive in a man to be attractive, as it demonstrates the desire to succeed and accomplish goals. Not all girls are fired up about that, but if you plan to spend your life as a couch potato, you should and must remain a bachelor. Because girls don't want inactive, passive men, it's very unromantic and totally unappealing. If you're on the couch now, get up immediately and do something important. Five, kindness and empathy. If you ask a man what he appreciates most in a woman, you will find that kindness always figures. No smart man wants a bitchy woman, and women don't want the equivalent in a man. I'm not sure quite what the male equivalent of a bitch is. A bitchy friend of mine says it's a bastard. She's probably right. But I digress, so let's just all be kind to each other. Kindness is quite irresistible in a man. It means being compassionate, being caring, and it really does mean being considerate. Number six on the list is physical attractiveness. I'm so happy it's last on the list. Good looks are great and very attractive, but can distract you from seeing the real person inside that pretty exterior. So it must never be the primary factor. You must look beyond it. In men, women like good hygiene, grooming, and for men to be in good shape. They like men who make an effort, who dress for an occasion, who always wear deodorant, who smell good up close. They don't have to be super fit or have bulging muscles, but they mustn't be lazy and uncaring about their appearance. Sometimes men want women to look great, but they don't seem to think that the woman would like to see the equivalent in them. I'm trying to be delicate here. Don't be a hypocrite. Be what you want to have. Now, A little aside, if you want to meet women, you must go to where the women are. There are lots of them, apparently, at yoga, for example. Google it. Find out where the girls are and show up as your best self. As a friend of mine once observed, the man of her dreams was not likely to jump out of the TV. Women also don't jump out of TVs. So these are very practical things, but let's go a bit deeper. The other thing that's good to look at is the qualities you want in a partner. Write them all down, putting the physical ones last, and then seriously go through each one and ask yourself, am I that? Am I reliable, honest, focused, caring? Do I have integrity, patience, honour? Begin with the lofty, non-negotiable ones and end with the other things that may not be so fixed. So, Bob, you must be the equivalent of the person you are looking for. Well, I hope that gives you some starting points. I really do think that we need often not to look at other people to see what suits us, but whether we are suited. That was our last question for today, and I hope something I've talked about has resonated with you. Please do write in with any question to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or email me at margo@margounlimited. Or you can write a letter and send it to Coast Access Radio, Level 1, 9 Mahara Place, Waikanae, 5036. I thought that I would seek a message from the universe at the end of the questions, as I felt sure there would be a theme or some touch point in the message for each of the people who had asked the questions. The thing that is in my mind is one that often comes through in these universal messages, and that is that we are responsible for dealing with ourselves and that others' journeys are not our business. Yes, we care, but it's not our place to interfere with or direct someone else. We need to be focused on getting us right, not changing others. Can you see that if we all did that, we would be doing away with judgment and conditions and not measuring up and all of that? We would all be in this dance of life in harmony together. I look forward to being back with you in 2 weeks with more important questions that you'd like some guidance on. And thank you so much for your time in joining me. As promised, here's today's message from the universe. There are indeed answers to the questions many of you have thought were unanswerable. Questions you thought were too big, too difficult, or just not available to you. This is not so. You have the ability to tune into the source of all, and when you do, the understanding that is available to you is unlimited. I see you, and I know you all. I am that power that created you, the power that fuels you, the power that draws you to seek more and to know more. You must hold up your heads and see who you really are and learn to walk in that knowledge. You are a piece of the divine. And so it is. Thank you.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.